4 minutes after 8 o'clock, welcome to The Morning Magazine for Friday, April 29th of 2022. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up after the headlines, a Persian music tour takes off tonight in Denver. We'll hear from one of the organizers. After that, we hear from a man who is bicycling from Denver to D.C. in an attempt to pass immigration reform before the November 22 elections. Finally, as always, we have our weekly segment, .org, spotlighting the work of a local nonprofit every Friday. At 8:30, Connections comes your way. As always, the phone lines will be open. Roger Wendell will host a guest live from Kazakhstan. Then at 9:30, we bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. That's all still ahead, but first, these local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Officials with the State Health Department and the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention confirmed the first human case of avian flu in the United States involving a poultry worker in western Colorado. As part of its monitoring and testing protocols of individuals exposed to infected birds, the State Health Department administered a nasal test earlier in the week to a man who works at a Montrose County poultry farm affected by the avian flu. The test revealed the presence of the H5N1 influenza, although repeat testing showed negative results. According to the State Health Department, the man, who is under the age of 40, is largely asymptomatic and is reporting only fatigue. Health officials do not know the extent of the man's exposure and say it is possible the virus was only present in the worker's nose without causing an infection. The worker is in isolation and is also receiving an influenza antiviral drug, per the guidance of the CDC. According to health officials, human infections of H5 avian viruses are rare, but direct and prolonged exposure to infected birds increases the risk. The city of Denver has temporarily closed La Alma Park and the Parks Recreation Center Thursday after a fatal shooting and gun violence earlier in the week. A 63-year-old man died Wednesday night while attempting to break up a fight at the park between two teenage girls. Police have arrested the boyfriend of one of the girls, who they allege pulled out a gun and shot the Good Samaritan. Police also said they responded to shots fired late Tuesday night, which resulted in no reported injuries. A Parks and Recreation spokesperson told the Denver Post the city also moved the location of its softball league as Tuesday's shooting occurred during a game. According to the spokesperson, the park has closed two other times in recent months because of violence. Prosecutors in Aurora have finished a review of cases involving discredited cops, unbeknownst to criminal defendants. KGNU's Jack Armstrong has more.
The City of Aurora's Attorney Office has sent out letters to 917 people who may have been impacted by an officer whose credibility is in question, otherwise known as a Brady letter. This event comes after presiding judge Sean Day ordered the city's attorney office to release information about an officer's conduct and reliability by reviewing court records from the past 2 years. These Brady letters act as objective informers on whether a police officer's credibility is in question, either for lying or harboring some unlawful bias seen in any case. 849 of the 917 cases not originally provided with information of the discredited cop did not require the information due to plea deals or failure to appear in court. Those with set court dates have also received the information, which will be crucial for upcoming hearings. For KGNU, I'm Jack Armstrong.
The Boulder County Director of Community Planning and Permitting has determined the special use permit for the gravel mine east of Lyons has lapsed, a decision that reverses the county official's determination done in 2018. The group, Save Our St. Vrain Valley, which has worked to prevent mining at the site, challenged the director's 2018 decision in court. No active mining has occurred on the approximate 881-acre site since 2006, which is currently owned by Martin Marietta. Under the county's land use code, a special permit lapses if there is no activity under a continuous 5-year period. Last year, the Colorado Court of Appeals remanded the director's 2018 decision for further consideration and said the director erred in his decision. The state appellate court also gave direction on on what constitutes mining activity under a special use permit. The director announced the reversal Wednesday, and with the announcement said he had reviewed the appellate court's opinion and the information submitted by Martin Marietta and Save Our St. Vrain Valley. Martin Marietta, who also petitioned the state Supreme Court to hear the appellate court ruling, has argued it has undergone reclamation and compliance activity to meet the conditions imposed by the permit. Colorado lawmakers are trying to clean up the unemployment benefit system, which, during the pandemic, drained the state's backup fund. KGNU's Emma Martinez has more.
Legislators introduced a bill Wednesday to help Coloradans claim jobless benefits and pay down approximately half its unemployment debt. They have less than 2 weeks to pass this bill through the General Assembly and get it to Governor Jared Polis. Colorado owes $1 billion to the federal government for unemployment insurance borrowed during the pandemic. $11 million in interest is due in October. The new legislation would send $6 million back to the U.S. Treasury, paying down the unemployment debt. They would also make COVID-era changes to the unemployment more permanent. Some of these changes include giving benefits for individuals living illegally in the country if employers pay into the system, eliminating the one-week waiting period to get benefits when funding is at a certain debt level, permitting unemployed workers who obtain part-time jobs to earn up to 50% of their salary before taking benefit reductions, and lastly, taking time to carefully look over additional payments to caregivers of dependents. Senator Chris Hansen and Denver Democrat, a bill sponsor, believes this bill would have Colorado in a much more stable place for when the next recession does occur. For KGNU, I'm Emma Martinez.
Today's weather includes mostly sunny skies with highs in the 60s. Winds could gust as high as 40 to 50 miles per hour. Tonight, it will be mostly clear with lows in the upper 30s, low 40s, and gusty winds continuing into the evening. Due to continued dry and windy conditions, the National Weather Service has issued a red flag warning for today, which is in effect from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. The current temperature in Boulder is 50 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Alexis Kenyon. Public music and dance performance by women have been illegal in Iran since the Islamic government took power in the wake of the Iranian revolution. Safeguarding and preserving these art forms has fallen largely to Iranian cultural promoters and practitioners in the diaspora. A community of those artists live here in the Front Range. Metro host Miriam Schiff spoke with Nusheen Farjadi of the Persian Cultural Circle about a music tour that opens tonight from a concert at the Elaine Wolf Theater in Denver.
The vocalist is Mojgan Shajarian. They are going to be touring with Sorvad Ensemble. Mojgan Shajarian, who's coming with Pejman Haddadi, a wonderful drummer, and also they're starting their tour here in Denver upon the invitation of their oud player, who is a good friend of ours, and his name is Sirvan Manhubi, with other wonderful musicians on the Kamanche and Santur. So they are starting the tour from Denver, and their vision is basically taking back the tradition of Iranian traditional music and also folk music as our heritage music. So this is music that is based on the Radif mode. So to explain a little bit more, the poetry is based on the poetry of the famous poets, and also some of the songs are very old songs that were sang in villages, and some of them were not even recorded. Some of them have been recently recorded. Some of them may have been recorded several years ago, or maybe 20, 30 years ago. So that is their base. And their vision is that they would like to introduce this type of music to newcomers. So people who are to Americans, to non-Iranians, to even the next generation of Iranian Americans who are new to this. That's quite exciting to be able to present this type of music and modality. Also, what we're very excited about is to reintroduce this to Iranians, to people of Iranian heritage, because over the years, over the last 40, 45 years that we have lived here, many of us have moved away from this tradition of music. Some of us may not find this music, maybe we may have not found it dynamic enough or maybe relatable enough. So maybe we have gone more toward Western music or different genres of music. So we would like to introduce this type of a music back to people of our own heritage as well. So Mojgan Shajaryan is the daughter of the Ustad Shajaryan, who has been, you know, anybody who has been to Iran or has been around Iranians knows Ustad Shajaryan. All of them, actually, his son, also Humayun, is actually a vocalist within the same tradition. So a very famous musical family in Iran.
I know that there's a story that, well, it's reality, that when he was in the hospital, people came outside the hospital and sang a song to him.
Yes, and actually, this was not anything practiced or anything that was staged. You know, people just showed up there and they started singing this very famous, you know, poetry and this famous song called Morgh Sahar. And a lot of times you see that within people of Iranian culture and in Iran or even in diaspora, you see that people get together in house parties or events or even at maybe demonstrations, and all of a sudden, spontaneously, they start singing a song together, or maybe they start playing a musical instrument. So that's a big part of our culture.
Let's talk a little bit about the classical and the folk. Iranian music has an undeniably tie to the region's literature and poetry. You can't talk about the music without talking about the poetry, because even if we read poetry by Rumi or Hafiz, it's musical, it flows. It's not that you just read it, you flow with it.
What we are hoping to do at the concert, and also in general, whenever we present our arts through different presentations and through different exhibits, what we're trying to do is we're trying to connect our audiences to art forms that are stemmed from thousands of years of history and culture. There are a lot of satisfying elements that are really helpful when they enter people's lives that I think that the Persian culture beautifully presents. You know, there are qualities of reflection, perseverance, and most important, love and unity that you can hear through these magical ancient instruments and poems. A lot of times you can read poems of Hafez. I mean, Hafez was writing poetry after the Arab conquest. So you can hear all the undertones of how it is to live after being attacked, after so many things have been taken away from you. It's not every day that you can be in Colorado and you can get to listen to the sounds of santur and camanche and daf and oud and all of that. And all those musical instruments, when they come together, they have this amazing vibration and effect that everybody and anybody can enjoy. This type of music belongs to all of us. It's not just for the Iranians or people of Iranian descent. This type of music is part of our collective history and our collective heritage.
Tomorrow, immigrant rights activists from across the nation will march in D.C. for a historic May Day rally. Among them, 50 Coloradans will welcome Omar Gomez de la Cruz, who biked over 1,800 miles from Denver to his final destination in Washington, D.C. KGN News' Rosanna Longo-Better has more.
How are you doing, Josh?
Really excited because we are just 2 days out from being in D.C., and the excitement is definitely building leading up to the big May Day March for Immigrant Rights for Immigration Reform on May 1st. And then we have plans beginning May 2nd and beyond to continue to push in D.C. for immigration reform. So it's getting really exciting.
Biking all the way from Denver to D.C. is not a joke. Tell us about this experience and why you decided to do this.
This idea came from the community. On February, there was a Day Without Immigrants. Immigrants across the country, undocumented folks across the country participated in this. And some of our local people in Denver and in Boulder decided they wanted to keep on meeting and continue to build pressure and momentum from there. And so Omar Gomez decided, you know what, I want to go to Washington, D.C. on May 1st. And other people were also like, yeah, that's a great idea. And then Omar said, I don't want to just go to Washington, D.C. I want to go there. I want to like power my way there. I want to go on bike. And I think that going on bike is going to really like call more people to take action and help them to realize that we can overcome the barriers that are before us. And so a couple of days after Omar made this decision, he invited me to join him. And I was a little taken aback because we were only a couple of weeks away from when the start date would be on March 21st. But I said, yes, you know, I can't join you the entire trip, but I'm going to join you for half of it. So that's where we've gone from there. And we've been organizing and trying to figure out how we can really build momentum. And it has been one of the most incredible experiences and journeys of my life. Almost every single day we've met with different local people, whether they're organizations or churches, local allies, local immigrants. And hearing their stories, hearing what inspires them, hearing their hope has been something that has fueled us this whole journey. And we carry all of their stories with us to Washington.
So I know that you are accompanying Omar now, and it would be fantastic if I have the opportunity to speak with him. But before that, I would like to ask you, how can people support this effort if they cannot bike with you guys? Is there other ways?
That's a great question. So we're only 2 days away from finishing the bike journey to Washington, D.C., but you can learn more about ways that you can take action to support us on our website. It's www.unitedforimmigrationreform.org. The four is like the number four. We are actually planning on May 2nd in Washington, D.C., Omar and others are going to start a hunger strike. So if you can't bike across the country, but you can fast, you are welcome to come out to Washington, D.C. and join us. Whether you're an immigrant or an ally, all are welcome. It could be something much simpler, right? You don't have to go to the extreme to support. Like, we need your help to call members of Congress, especially our U.S. senators, to call the White House. And so picking up the phone and taking a couple of minutes of your time or sending an email. And we even have like a pre-drafted message on our website that you can use to email out. All of that's really important. And then we are calling community to every day at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Mountain Time, praying for immigration reform and for world peace. You can also join us May 1st and May 2nd for a day without an immigrant. So don't go to work, don't go to school, don't spend any money. And tell your employers, tell your family, tell your friends why you're doing it, right? Because you sharing your story and why it's important to you, even if you don't have a really personal connection, if you just say, hey, I heard this interview and I was inspired and this is why, that means a lot. And that can go ripple effects that you never knew were possible.
That is Josh Stanlins with Colorado Immigrant Rights Coalition telling us about this movement that has motivated thousands of people to join the effort, the movement, some in bike and some in prayer and in demonstrations and in meditation too, during these 40 days that you're trying to pressure the federal government to pass immigration reform before November 2022 elections. Omar Gomez, he's an immigrant rights activist, and we have the opportunity to catch him in the road to speak with him to find out how is it going and why is he deciding to do the sacrifice along with other activists to request an urgent immigration reform for all those 11 million undocumented immigrants working here in the United States. It is a pleasure to have you, Omar. Tell us how you're doing.
Hola.
¿Cómo le va usted, señor?
I'm tired.
So tell me when you left Denver and how many miles have you ride already?
Well, the day I left Denver was it March 21st, and that morning was a lot of snow and was cold. So far, we have 1,759 miles, is my guess. And this is my 39th day on the bike. This has been kind of like a religious experience. Like, I don't think something else to describe it, because first I stand up for something that came into my mind, an idea to do something so we can raise our voices. But just from the people that I met in this trip, the ones that reach out to us to support us, because some people sometimes offer houses or churches so we can stay, or sometimes we connect with them. And, you know, we pass the message while we are here in the road. And the first thing that comes into my head at the beginning is like, why we forgot to be humans? Why are we still treating ourselves like we are not part of this entire creation? It's a lot of suffering.
How this fasting decision came to be?
Because I say, well, we're going to do this movement, but how are we going to keep the pressure on? Because normally all the movements in May 1st, it is not a keep going movement. So we need to do something that keeps going. So here I am, 40 days left from home, biking, and do all this journey just for go back again? For what? So they can probably laugh of us again and use us as excuses again for voting in November. So like, hey, you know, we promise you again and again and again. And that's not the point. A lot of people pass away in this country that they have been serving the economy of this country for years, and they pass away. What is going to happen probably is they don't like to see what's going on, because now it's obvious that somebody is up there exposing himself, saying, listen, this is what's going on every day, and you guys don't want to realize it. But now it's in front of you. It's like, they have the expression says, the pink elephant in the room, they don't want to talk about it, but now it's exposed. Well, I'm sorry, this is the reality. This country always stand up for human rights in other countries. They claim to China it is terrible because they use their now they're against human rights. We are in the same spot, but they don't recognize it.
Omar Gomez, what a pleasure to be able to speak with you. I hope that your last miles are satisfying, are a way to connect with others, and that you continue this movement that you have started from Denver to D.C. to call on immigration reform for the 11 undocumented immigrants living in the United States of America. Thank you so much for this opportunity, and we hope that your fasting also goes easy. Thank you again.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo-Better.
Welcome to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits.
I'm David Lasker-Zuski. I'm co-director at Uproot Colorado.
My name is Rita Mary Hennigan. I am also co-director at Uproot Colorado along the Western Slope. So Uproot's mission is to increase nutritional security in our state by harvesting surplus nutrient-dense fruits and vegetables and redistributing them to hunger relief organizations, while also supporting the resilience of farmers along the way.
We're looking at our food system from a symptom and systems level. So part of our work is to cultivate community volunteerism, to leverage the power of the community to take part in recovering surplus food and help redistribute that into kind of the parts of the community that don't have genuine everyday access to healthy food.
According to ReFed, there are 34 billion pounds of surplus fruits and vegetables that remain unharvested from U.S. farm fields each year. And when you kind of juxtapose that against the 1 in 3 Coloradans who are experiencing food insecurity, you know, we kind of exist to bridge that gap while also reconnecting folks to our food system, because I think that that is kind of the third major issue that we see and are hoping to have an impact on, is the disconnect that is so common in our food system nowadays. We think that bringing people back to the soil and to the land and witnessing all that goes into the production of our food is really important and has the potential to be really impactful on reducing that downstream food waste that Dave mentioned.
I will say that I think that we look at ourselves as a community-facing organization. So I believe in the idea that we're looking at the symptoms and the system. So the system itself is inequitable, but I think it really will take a village to create more equity.
There are lots of ways that folks can get involved. So one way is by visiting our website, which is uprootcolorado.org. And there you can sign up to volunteer with us. And so if our mission resonates with anyone who's listening, we have a donate page on our website and would greatly appreciate any contributions that folks feel inspired to make.
You've been listening to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits. For more .orgs or for more information on this episode, visit news.kgnu.org. And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Alexis Kenyon. Special thanks to Stacey Johnson, Jack Armstrong, Emma Martinez, Shannon Young, and Rosanna Longo-Better. Stay tuned for Connections with Roger Wendell just after this news update from the BBC.